Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about my take on Pythagoras as a DC or Marvel comic hero. So in previous podcasts, I've looked at the ancient philosophers 1 to 40. The first 1 to 40 is a good way to look at the main ones. I've put at 1 to 40 gets you up from Tales of Greece all the way up to Philo and Seneca and a few other ones up at the Roman eras if you go through them. So it's a good way of going through it. And I've been talking about philosophers, and there's a sort of standard way that you look at philosophers, trying to see the impact, try and take them seriously and all that type of stuff. But sort of the nature of things is that I'm a research scientist, and so therefore don't necessarily come up with new ideas and sort of think they're the most fantastic ones and the greatest ones, but they need more investigation. And my general viewpoint looking at Pythagoras is that we should look at him through the lens of a comic book hero, and sort of understand that our way of looking at things, where we have comic books, serious journals and other things like that, and serious sources, credited sources, and novice sources, to sort of understand that the lens that we receive Pythagoras through has gone through an era where there hasn't been that way. And this is something you get from I've actually got all these parrots about to attack me. These are huge green parrots and stuff like that here. I'm out here in Australia, but let's get going. The idea is that the actual ancient Greeks didn't, and the Romans didn't, have a strong differentiation between the fantastical and the mythical and the mystic and reality. And so often their entertainment industry, which would be people singing the praises of things and people singing ballads. So, yeah, if you look in ancient Greece, the major way that information got through is roaming people who would sing the ballads of and tell the stories of. And so it's almost as if and they'd have to actually cater for all different types of audience, the serious people, the politicians, basic workers and peasants and slaves and stuff like that. They'd have to sing their ballads and appeal to all these people. So these people have different tastes. And one of the tastes would be these fantastic stories of the gods. And so you get this real feeling when you read back into some of the ancient Greeks, and I don't read ancient Greek, I do read a bit of the Latin. And you're reading through and you say, this is someone giving a standard account as if you would expect in the Australian newspaper or the New York Times, the Guardian, a fairly authoritative recount of what was going on, and they would say refer to all these mystical things happening. A certain cow was slaughtered and entrails were out, an eagle was seen flying over here, a ghost was seen here, and that would be just threaded in with the normal story of discussing what's going on. And you sort of get a general feeling that there wasn't this sophistication that we have here. I wouldn't call it sophistication, stratification of information. So we now really know that we are entertained by information, but we don't take it as seriously as where that barrier between entertainment and actually serious information content has developed now, but it wasn't as strong back then. And so when you come back to it, there's actually very little we know about Pythagoras, which is actually rigorously provable in terms of Guardian or New York Times, provable true. But there's a whole heap of stuff which has come through on the comic book level, and it's been passed from certain levels, and at a certain point we've said, oh, this is comic book stuff, and we're going to cut it off, and which is sort of correct. You should cut it off, but it's also valid because it's the story which has been passed through. So let's start with Pythagoras. Pythagoras was an ancient Greek person. He lived on the Ionian Islands and moved from the islands to colonies around Sicily, that area of Greece. The Greek Empire had expanded way before the Roman one. We do have rigorous facts about the wars and the times and places like that. And so we know that he was an important figure, and he was had started a cult, and there was a group of people called the Pythagoreans who really much followed his philosophy. So what his philosophy was and what his philosophies was as interpreted by the followers and then attributed to him is sort of getting a little bit vague. And that there's Greek writers, and let's start off on some of the... So just sit back and we'll just listen to some of the stories about Pythagoras. So Pythagoras is the Pythagoras' theorem, the hypotenuse squared plus the opposite and adjacent squared equals the opposite squared plus the adjacent squared for a right-angled triangle. That's the Pythagorean theorem and triads. People may know about his philosophy of music, which has gone through, and various. And if you know about cosmology, he's a very important figure in there. But let's start off with more of the fantastical ideas, getting more to the DC comic like Thor or an ancient gods. And these things now exist in comics and in children's themed books. I think Adventures of Apollo, they're called, you know, the American college students who have got who are gods, and that follows through. I've never quite followed it, but it's that era. We know it's not true, but back then people, when they listened to it, some people knew it wasn't true, but the villagers and slaves who were hearing it about it, you know, what's going on, why is this person so powerful? Well, just over the horizon, just in the next village, these fantastical things happen. So one of the things that really, just ticking off the top of your head, one of the things is the idea that Pythagoras, a great person, had a golden thigh. That is, he went to the Greek Olympic Games. We don't know whether he did it or not, but when he competed there, he ran, and his leg, part of the top of his leg, both one leg, I suppose it's only one, was gold. And so people marveled at that. Then trying to pick up some of the more fantasful stuff, which I think is not true. I've only most recently, most of this gets filtered out. There was a troublesome bear in the hills, and Pythagoras spoke with the bear and said, "Don't be troublesome." And the bear said, "All right," and behaved the rest of its bear life in extreme interest. And I suppose this is one of my threads, interest. I'm interested in bears throughout history. They make key appearances in the Bible, in Greek mythology, in a bear trainer was important for one of the empresses of Constantinople, the Eastern Roman Empire. The bears do appear as important things, so I'm always fascinated by that type of thing. And then we get some other stories. So given that we know nothing concrete, I'm just telling you these stories, and I've sort of put them up to you in terms of the view of a comic book, and not denigrating it as a comic book, but saying, look, the comic book is what the people at the time believed in different strands, and there was no newspapers or stuff like that. Things had to be shoved into the brain of a bard who would go around and sing these various things to communicate what's going on. So largely people couldn't read, and that's also another interesting thing about reading. We'll get into that in possibly another episode. So let's start off at Pythagoras and maths. He did start a maths cult, and there's aspects of that maths cult which you see nowadays. The symbols of his maths cult are seen on the boards of schools very quickly. You say, "Oh, that's a symbol of a maths cult." No, I'm trying to explain that point. Oh, okay. But it started off that Pythagoras was, it's evidently rich to a certain point, and he was despaired at people's lack of interest in maths. This is the early story, and it's a story I've seen. So I've picked up all these stories from all sources, and are any of them true? Probably not, but they're instructive of the general our conceptualization of him. So he started off and he said, well, he found a small boy and he said, look, I'm going to pay you a penny each day. I don't think they had pennies back then, but a coin every day for you coming here to learn maths. And the boy dutifully turned up at the marketplace every day for his maths lesson and watched slowly as the pile of coins went from Pythagoras across to the boy. And at the end of a certain amount of time, the number of coins ran out, and the boy said, are there any more coins? And he ran away, never to be seen again, and which made Pythagoras despair about maths education. And that's a maths education story. And by and by, Pythagoras left his island, the Ionian island, somewhere in the Mediterranean, Adriatic, or that area, went across to Italy and founded a group of following, and the following was a maths based following, and the story is that he used to wear golden slippers, robes, and there was a amphitheatre with a curtain around it, and that curtain, and this is true, it's come into the English language, that curtain is called the esoteric curtain. So if you got inside that curtain, you got to get to the knowledge, and we now today talk about the esoteric knowledge. So this is, we don't know whether it's true, but the word and the idea, the concept, comes from this comic view. So what would happen is Pythagoras, in order to get within that curtain, you had to have a vow of silence for 5 years. So you would not speak for 5 years, and when you successfully hadn't spoken for 5 years, you could come within this curtain, and Pythagoras would come out with a maths problem, and it would be a fruit and a lute, fruiter and lute, as in not money, lute, as L-U-T-E. Playing music. Music was also important, and he would pose the mathematical problems. People would work on it during the day, and towards the end of the day, the end of the shoot, he would give the answer, and people would celebrate. And this was a cult, and it sort of kept things going. There was, there was a group of people from the neighbouring village who wanted to join in. They couldn't because they hadn't gone through the process, and this started a war with the neighbouring village. But this is true. Look, I don't think it really matters whether it's true. It's part of the actual comic book story, the Marvel comic. His golden thigh. I think he also rode on a golden. Pythagoras rode on a golden arrow. That's how he was able to be seen in two places at once. You know, with he was seen at one point in the ancient world and then another point in the ancient world. Not that, you know, people got their stories confused. They thought that he. I think even Aristotle wrote for the stories of Aristotle's, for all his works. If you really go through it, you occasionally see a snip of this mystical world. So Aristotle was a major philosopher way after Pythagoras. So Pythagoras was one of the earliest philosophers. So just going off to my head, 570 BC was Aristotle's 360 BC. So in terms of timeline, it's the Aristotle's like Newton, and Aristotle's Pythagoras's like Newton of that time, and then 200 years later, we've got Einstein and Aristotle. So that general type of thing. Now Aristotle, Pythagoras believed in numbers and shapes, and we have to really get into this in terms of their belief in numbers was not mathematics as we think, mathematics applied to engineering, that pure love of mathematics as a mystic experience. And so one of the mystic experiences was with the spheres on in space, which were the planets. So if you see a planet as a spot, it's a big leap to say it's a sphere, but we know nowadays that they are a sphere. But he conceptualized them as a sphere because they are perfect, and spheres are perfect in his system of shapes. So he went from the different multi-sided pyramids to an isosahedron, eventually to a sphere. It was the most perfect shape. So sphere was a perfect sphere, and it went through the heavens with a vibration. Very interesting aspect to it. He also had a system of music which was conceptually mathematically right, but physically flawed, and it took way up to many 2,000 years up to Galileo's father to actually start to prove some of this wrong. So he influenced a hell of a lot of things. But on the number front, I will get into other stories. On the number front, he had a series of numbers. The number one, or the number one was a sacred number because it was just incomprehensible. One of something that's just really hard to think about. And that was written as a small dot with a ring around the outside. And that really influenced a whole heap of thinking, afterwards. It was Nomad? Nomad sounds wrong. It's the number one. Really important because that's our symbol for an atom, and it's a symbol for different elements. This dot with a ring around the outside to show it. There's the dyad. And then different numbers meant different things. I think even with female numbers, because they're divisible by two, male numbers were odd, and you had different numbers being sacred, and 10 being a particularly sacred, perfect number, and 5 being a number of families, and different numbers being sacred and reverence. So there was a reverence for the numbers and a reverence for shapes, and this was actually part of a cult. So if you think of the Scientology, how they actually believe in these weird things, they dress up in naval uniforms and do these strange things and personality tests. It was generally a cult, wasn't it? So in Scientology, they do tests, and you have to give your money over for so many years, and you become committed because you've just given so much of your life. You can't really compute doing anything else. I'll really have to think of that. Monad. It's a monad. Yeah, there you go. Monad diet. Not. Why did I say nomad? Grey nomad. It's a monad. Sorry, it's just coming back to me. I'm doing cardiac rehab, so my brain has, it was totally scrambled by anesthetics and getting back and being isolated, not being able to teach for a while. So it's a monad. So it's really important that the monad actually comes up in the when you really look into it, the origin of a whole feast of other theories, competing theories on cells, and it just keeps on coming up. It's also, the monad is the symbol that we have for the Bohr atom. Yeah, so that's really, really crazy. So Pythagoras, he had no money, and he had a communal view of life. And he really is, as far as I can see, I've read a bit of Marx, and I've read Pythagoras, and I would have to say, and there's people were going around the ancient world looking at different civilizations, working out what's the best way to do it. So it was a huge melting pot of different political experiments. Sparta is something I could go on for a while because that was an interesting thing to read about. Went around the world and actually picked up a hodgepodge of political systems and stuck it together to be the Spartan civilization. So it is true that these things were—they're not the first communism, but they had the first elements of communism. That is, no money, communal property, each to his own. All these theories, and of course, a great deal of cult propaganda. They had basically their Pravda newspaper at the time. Now, there's various stories of the first mathematical murder. So the Pythagoreans afterwards had this bloke on a boat. This is the Aussies telling you, a bloke on a boat. And he said, mate, I can think of a number like the square root of 2. It never ends. It's not rational. And people said, are you saying our numbers are not sacred because rational numbers were sacred? Okay. And they got so upset, they threw him overboard and drowned him. The first person, what's the motive? Oh, he said something mathematically offensive to us. He was correct, but all these people really, really thinking intensely about maths. You also have to understand, in the ancient world, there wasn't a lot of TV, a lot going on. So the bard would come out, and that would be the main thing that day. You'd go out to a play, and that would be just the end. You'd spend your day thinking about going out to the play. You'd go out to the play. You wouldn't have to think about parking and bills, and you know, you wouldn't have to say, you know, you come out to Pythagoras wouldn't come out and say, look, would you please switch off your mobile phones, and the exit safety exits are here, because you know, really nowhere to run to. And you wouldn't have snacks in your purse, you know, plastic snacks in your purse to feed your kiddies or things like that. It was a sort of a crazy world to get your mind around. Now let's finish off. Look, there's lots of Pythagorean stories I can tell. But I think it's the main thing that he was a frustrated teacher, you know, by the youth of the day just running away, and he set up his own game show, basically. It appears to be like a game show where he suckered people in, and I can't believe there's the monad and dyad symbols, and some of these symbols come through today. Some of the actual thoughts, you know, what people do is they throw out the legends and stuff like that as comic book and not being a good source, and they just throw it out. But inside it is, you know, the symbols are definitely there. Some of the actual logic is there, because the logic I use today, you know, what's going on, it has to have come from that time. Even though the fact that this spokesperson just went up to a bear and said, look, chill out, mate, none of this going through and wreaking havoc. And what I really love about bears, there's the bears in the Bible, there's two she-bears who God said, look, this is the Bible one, which I like. God said, look, you two she-bears, look, those children over there have hurled insults at this rabbi, prophets or something, you know, holy people, calling him bald. And just go into the village so the she-bears went into the village and knocked on all the doors and stole all the children. That's a lovely story. So the bears having personality is part of the ancient comic book. I must have offended half a dozen people there. But in terms of just an amazing story, I'm not saying it's not any of this is not true. It just has to be interpreted going through. Now, Pythagoras, they had a reference not eating meat. They were vegetarian. And there's a few good vegetarians throughout history, quite interesting vegetarians. Pythagoras apparently was a vegetarian. And then there's beans. Now, I can remember, look, there's probably three stories to do with beans. But beans were sacred. Now, apparently, I've read this somewhere, because the bean stalk has a hole in it, and the hole is believed as a breathing hole to the underworld. Go, just get this across. So, Pythagoras' death, he was running away from people he had upset. How could anyone upset? He's really, Australians will know this person, the Tony Barber of the, Tony Barber sales of the century of the ancient world. But how could he upset any person? I cannot imagine anyone with golden thigh runs on a bear tamer, does a Pythagorean theorem, gets everyone hooked on numbers, how he could upset anyone. But apparently he had upset someone. And he was running away from the enemies, which is quite good, and then he came to a bean field. And the beans are sacred, so he couldn't go in. So rather than go in, he said, I'm finished, you've got me, I can't run into a bean field. And he died. Is any of that true? I don't know whether finding the truth is going to be all that important, because the important fact is that all those legends came forward. It's as if there's been some sort of apocalypse, and someone's, for our civilization, found out a whole series of DC comic books, Marvel comic books, and began to reconstruct it. So basically, civilization was being filtered through its communication and entertainment network going forward. So that's my view on Pythagoras, and it's not an authoritative view. It's not a view that I think has to be, that I am too concerned that people agree with. But it's a view from having read a whole heap of things about Pythagoras, all contradictory, all very unlikely to be true, but having elements of extreme relevance to our society. That's, I suppose, the key thing I want to say. That although these are not true, they are relevant to our society. I'd get in trouble if I said a lot of Bible stories are like that. They may not be true, but they're extremely relevant. They're written for a reason, there. So at the stage where you've got people who want to be seen as an authority or want this to be an internet meme, you know, this podcast go viral or something like that, I've got no intention, anything like that. It's just talking through and getting through the general idea, and the general idea of thinking differently, becoming an opinion. I invite you to have a different opinion. That's just what people do when they're trained in research and trained to read all these books. Anyone can read heaps and heaps of books. It's just, you just really expect them to say, well, you've read all these books, what do you think? And if they think, I think exactly what I've been told, it's just a cringe. I think I've interpreted a few people like that, a few researchers, and I ask them about ethics or stuff like that, and they say, ethics is too much for me. That's just too hard. Ethics is the too hard basket. Okay, that's enough said. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.